All right, I'll just do, this is Cliff Kellogg from the SSBCI office in Washington with several of my colleagues here. And I'll just read off the states that I heard are represented on the call. And if I missed anyone, please, as we have before, just let us know at the end. I have Arkansas, Oklahoma, Nevada, Arizona, Ohio, Georgia, Indiana, Texas, Iowa, and California. Am I missing
anyone? Nebraska.
Thank you, Nebraska.
Florida.
Illinois.
Thank you, Florida, Illinois. Anyone else?
Wisconsin.
Thank you, Wisconsin.
Well, we haven't really seen anything change as well.
Is there anything we hear that suggests or do you, is there a firm foundation?
As we have in the past, please, if you're able to mute your telephone, that would help the sound quality. I want to welcome you to our fourth conference call on programs that are applying for SSBCI funding. And as with the last call, I've asked my colleague Paul Pride to lead this conversation. So, Paul?
Thank you, Cliff. As you know from previous previous calls, what we've done is focused on a particular type of what's called an other credit support program in each call. Today we're going to focus on state venture capital programs. And as before, we've had we've asked an organization with significant experience in these in the program under discussion to give us a brief 10 to 15 minute overview and to take questions from the other participants in the call. Today we're fortunate to have Robert Hurd of Cimarron Capital Partners to talk about the organization of state-sponsored angel seed, venture, and mezzanine funds. So without further delay, Robert, thanks for joining us, and would you give us sort of an overview of what your organization has done in this area?
Sure. Thank you very much. So I'm here to give just some grist for the discussion today. Our firm, I'm going to walk through these slides, and I failed to number them, so hopefully you can follow me. Our firm, just briefly, manages venture capital and private equity programs, generally for states. We have programs operating in Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Iowa, and we're actively engaged in helping create angel funds and angel networks in other regions. So with that, the second slide is a picture of how the venture capital industry tends to work. You have institutional sources of capital up there at the top, sometimes represented by a fund of funds, and, of course, other organizations that occupy that spot are banks and insurance companies and wealthy individuals, along with pension funds and endowments. They invest in funds, seed funds, venture funds, various types of private equity funds. As a development activity, our groups have invested in angel funds. The difference between the industry as a whole and those that engage in seeking development impacts is that we invest in funds that we expect will support entrepreneurial development in our client regions. So now on to number three. Of course, all capital exists within a continuum. As we all know, businesses go through a life cycle where they conceive of an idea, demonstrate the viability of the idea, reach a point where some of them have the chance to grow very rapidly, and eventually become bankable. The forms of capital we're talking about today tend to reside at the on the left end of that scale. the forms of seed capital and venture capital exist to generally not at the idea stage, but at the startup stage and at the fast growth stage. So that's what we're talking about. The reason states become interested in this, and the reason the federal government becomes interested in this part of the capital continuum, is that venture capital historically, in its various forms, has been an important part of the growth of entrepreneurial firms, the kind of firms that can create a huge impact where they take root and prosper. Venture capital is pretty much a bicoastal phenomenon even to this day. It exists, of course, all across the country, but there are regions that capture the lion's share of this kind of money. And so many states have attempted to build the infrastructure that supports professional seed and venture capital. I provided this slide to give you a link when you're doing your research. The Price Waterhouse Coopers Money Tree Report is a really great spot for data on the industry as a whole. You can sort and slice the data in a number of ways. And then the SSTI, the State Science and Technology Institute, does a really good job of providing state-by-state venture capital profiles, and that link is provided. On to slide number five. The organizational structures that tend to come into play in sponsoring or supporting venture capital activities start at the private level, so at the bottom of the slide here. Most venture capital, of course, is private, and the people who organize venture capital funds tend to organize them as limited partnerships, where the venture capitalist, the person you think of as the venture capitalist, is the general partner, and the people that supply the capital are limited partners. Increasingly, however, these structures are created as limited liability companies, where you have not a general partner, but a managing member or a managing director. Now, at the state level, states have line agencies. We think of departments of commerce typically in that category. Then they have organizations that are one step removed, development finance agencies that are in various forms. In Oklahoma, there are trusts where the state's the beneficiary of the trust. And then many states are using private organizations that are designated by the state to operate for the benefit of the state. The second slide gives you a bunch of boxes. This is the program we operate in Arkansas. And basically, in designing this fund of funds activity in Arkansas, we used just about all of those forms of organization to accomplish the investment activity in Arkansas. The Arkansas Institutional Fund is a fund of funds that invests in seed, venture, and angel funds supported by the Arkansas Development Finance Authority. There's an entity, a trust, that holds the equity for the benefit of the state. It uses private capital, it uses private management, and invests in private funds. So these can get kind of complicated depending upon how state resources are organized. Slide number seven, venture capital funds tend to accept capital in the form of cash. There are some examples, and there are some state-sponsored examples where the capital, original capital for a fund came in the form of assets, such as an existing portfolio that was contributed into a fund as the capital for the fund. But you don't see that very often. Mostly these are all strictly cash cash in, cash out. Sometimes the distributions that come from funds are not in the form of cash, but in the form of assets, where a fund is distributing an interest in a company. But that is not too common either. Risk and expected return. Risk in venture capital is very, very large. It's about the, the lottery. It's the one of the highest forms of risk one can take. Therefore, in order to manage the risk for a state, our approach has been to invest in a number of funds. That helps diversify the risk. And the return to this asset class varies over time. The industry historically has outperformed by a large margin other forms of investment, but not over the last decade. It's generally underperformed over the last decade. And so people who invest in this asset class, institutions who invest, really are prepared to risk their money and lose all their money while they invest. The historical performance of state-sponsored funds tends to lag, as you would expect, the industry as a whole. States tend to have more than one objective. They have a return on investment objective, but then they also have a developmental impact objective. The portfolio that we have operated for the longest period of time is in Oklahoma. The returns, financial returns to us from that portfolio tend to track the average returns for the industry as a whole, but we have had points in time where the industry has lost money and our portfolios have also lost money at a commensurate level. The developmental impacts can be huge. By delivering equity into a region, businesses tend to gain the kind of money that can attract other equity capital and other debt. So a region that has an abundance of sources of equity capital can do an extremely good job of making resources available to their entrepreneurs. In Oklahoma, we've invested in about 19 funds since 1992, so this has been over a very long period of time. We've invested about $60 million in those funds. We've achieved a $1.3 billion impact as measured by economists as a result of those investments in the state of Oklahoma. So it can be very good. Now, transactions. The people in Michigan really, a long time ago, came up with the idea of the difference between wholesale and retail. We tend to be wholesalers. A retailer would be, in the venture capital industry, would be a group, a state that seeks to invest directly in companies. We tend to invest in funds that invest in companies. And so we think of ourselves at that level. Transactions are at every conceivable size. Angels tend to invest in amounts as small as $25,000. Venture funds tend to invest in chunks of millions up to tens of millions. And private equity firms in larger amounts still. Investing in seed, venture capital, seed capital, venture capital, all tend to be very long-lived investments. That's not always true. There are times, particularly in bubble years, where investments are made and exits are achieved in a very short period of time, meaning months and years. But generally, when an investment is made in a venture fund, and they in turn invest in a portfolio of companies, that takes 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, sometimes longer to fully liquidate those investments. Exits these days tend to happen as trade sales, where a company is sold to another company. You almost never see IPOs at this time. Sorry. Let's see. My computer is freezing up. That's good. The next one is, I think, slide 9. That's great. There we go.
Robert, we never
I believe I'm on slide 9. I have, this is, you know, this always happens when you don't want it to happen. Benefits, key opportunities, and challenges. Power of equity capital to leverage other forms of capital, of course, is well known, and that's why we tend to like it. It also has the ability to focus on entrepreneurs that have sometimes the greatest potential to bend the trend in a region. So by focusing on entrepreneurs who have the potential to grow and grow to a very large size over a rapid period of time, as an economic developer, we find that it's a good way to leverage our resource and to focus on the kinds of people that can produce the results we want. By investing in angel funds, you can really find ways of engaging the people in the region that are good at building companies, people who've built a business, they have exited from the business, they've become prosperous, and now they're to the point where they want to invest in other young companies. That as much as the dollars available from people like that, the talent is even more important. The obstacles to this activity are many. Challenge of finding investors who are willing to risk their money. This particular program seeks to achieve a big impact, a lot of leverage, and so a dollar from the federal government is expected to leverage over time at least $10 from the combined private and public resource. Finding people to risk their money is not easy to do. The pace of fund formation is always a challenge. We tend to believe that you have to take care not to push too hard on the formation of funds. You really want to wait for people who demonstrate they have the skill set to do things like this and to support those. So you need to be, while aggressive in marketing the resource, you also have to be patient looking for the deals that make sense. And interesting. Yeah. Apologize, I'm having trouble with my computer and not able to see my presentation. Yeah. Well, I apologize. My computer is completely frozen up. So I believe the next slide was a description of the form of organization we're using for this SSBCI resource. We've decided that, at least in Oklahoma, that the best way that we can use this resource, which is a pretty small resource in venture capital terms, is to generate a more robust angel investor network in the state. This is the hardest part of the venture capital industry to catalyze, and we're in the midst right now in Oklahoma. We have about 10 communities that are interested in organizing angel funds, and we're going to seek to use this resource to support some of those. Now, in doing that, we've decided to invest also in supplying the infrastructure, the administration, the method support to angel groups so that once they get started, we work with them throughout the life of their investment cycle. We supply the best methods for investing throughout the deal cycle, from finding deals, valuing deals, pricing deals, structuring deals, ultimately managing deals and exiting from deals. We'll be providing that kind of support. So at the last, the end of this presentation, I've given you just some links that provide you some further grist, the kind of things we're involved in. There might be some material you could take from those sites that would be of help to you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Robert, this is Paul Pride. What would you say the minimum size of a state venture capital fund or program has to be in order to be successful? Is there any minimum size?
Well, it depends on what form of fund you're seeking to catalyze.
Okay.
If you're seeking to support regional venture capital funds and attract them to your state, you probably need about $50 million. To catalyze angel give a different example, to support local seed funds that may be organizing at the university, several $1 million can go a long way to encouraging people to organize in communities and at institutions like that. We think over time the $13 million we have in Oklahoma will catalyze a really exciting number of angel funds where we invest, say, $500,000 in an angel fund matched by a couple $1 million from other angels. $500,000 times 10 gets us interesting level of investment. More importantly, it gives us an awful lot of business building talent available to support young companies. So this is not a lot of money, and we've chosen to use it that way.
How much time would you give some, in being conservative, you're going to launch, let's say, an angel fund. How much time is it going to take? How much time should you give yourself?
Well, here's how we would go about it. We would organize some kind of a training event that gathers prospective angel investors in a region and introduce them to the concepts of angel investing. From that, we tend to find the people who have the enthusiasm and the willingness. Organizing an event like that takes several months. Then the kind of discussion that happens among angels usually also takes several more months. So by the time you begin to engage with angels, prospective angels we're talking about here for the most part, and get them to the point where they're organized and ready to capitalize their fund is upwards of a year. At least that's been our experience. And now, in some states and in Oklahoma, we have a couple of groups that have been working at this for quite a long time and are poised to close a fund. And so they become immediate candidates for us. We have a little seed fund that's sponsored by the Chickasaw Nation, and they're an interesting candidate. They appear to be supplying $4 million, and we might commit $500,000 to $1 million to a fund like that.
Does Cameron, do they carry a management fee for the deals, or how are they compensated?
They, all of these funds really need to be burdened with a management fee. Now, some angel groups are self-managed, and they don't come with a management fee. But most angel groups could sure benefit from thoughtful support, administration, and management, at least to a certain degree. And so we think every fund, if it's going to have a crack at reaching its potential, could benefit from thoughtful management. Typical management fee is about 2.5% of fund capital on an annual basis over the life of the fund, or at least until the capital is fully deployed.
Now that
doesn't fit real well with the administrative fee structure of the program, but the SSBTI program. But if private investors are providing capital, it's our understanding that the fees that they pay can be used to support the overhead of these funds.
So the 2.5% is the annual management fee. Is there upside for the Cameron Capital as well?
Frequently, the managers receive upside in the form of carried interest. A typical carried interest is 20% of net realized gains. That's gains net of losses. Frequently, they have to make up the management fee before they participate in the carry.
So if Cameron comes in and starts a new program, do they put any capital in themselves to help develop the network out, or is it all state support to put the network in to develop the funds?
Well, a state venture capital, in our approach, you're funding supporting a series of angel funds across the state, and each fund needs to be capitalized at least $2 million. So that means that generally 80% of the money, I'd say 60 to 80% of the money, probably needs to be private capital supplied by angels, and then the balance supplied by this resource. That's our approach.
I guess my question, so if does your company go out and try to form those angel groups and put forth the administrative costs of doing that, or are you looking to the states to pay for that activity, and then you come in to help manage the fund?
We actually go out on our own nickel and get the funds formed, and we are working in states where all of that upfront cost is borne by us. We're also working in a state where the upfront costs are borne by the state. So we have different ways we work. The upfront is a small part of the whole endeavor, of course. The real challenge is to figure out a way to support funds over a very long period of time so that they have a good crack at success. The thing about angel investing is it's an incredible resource. And if you could lead them in a way where they prosper as angel investors, they're going to be available for a very long time. They're going to keep coming back and keep doing deals. If we lead them in a way where they lose money, then they're going to lose their taste for it and be gone. So our approach is to take a very complete and thoughtful system for helping angels get into angel investing, become part of a team that does good angel investing, pursue methods that help them do great work, and get the support they need throughout the life of their fund. Therefore, they still might lose money, right? But at least they have a much better chance of succeeding. Well, one of the problems with angel investing is they tend to be very parochial and very stuck in a silo. And we think it's really helpful to have angel groups that are part of a larger network where they're interacting with other angel funds, other angels, and the larger venture capital industry, where they're meeting VCs and learning how to gain access to technologies to support their companies. So that's part of our model in the states where we're working.
So we should realistically anticipate that if we move forward this type of model, we would be paying 2.5 interest of the total cost of the fund for 7 to 10 years, plus expectation of a carried interest of 20% on top of that.
I think the people who you might engage to help you would be expecting fees of that type.
Okay.
Robert, you were talking about you're managing at the wholesale level.
I can't hear you, Debbie.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Paul Pryor.
Excuse me.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, Paul. Yes.
At the retail level, what's the management like for non-angel funds? Let's talk about venture and mezzanine and other types of funds. Who manages those, and is the same sort of structure employed?
They're different. Angel funds tend to be managed by the angel members themselves. In other words, angels are making decisions about their investments and participating at some level in the work of the angel fund. Venture funds tend to be managed by firms, professional fund managers, and the provider of capital is only providing capital and it doesn't expect to participate in making decisions about investments or supporting the work of the fund. So the fund manager does all the work of finding deals, evaluating deals, structuring and making deals, making the decision about the deal, and then working to support the portfolio of deals over time. So with a VC fund, you're actually hiring a manager to do all that work. With angels, you expect, because the funds are tiny, and you really, regardless of whatever fee you charge, you can't really support full management for an angel fund. You expect the angels to be engaged in the work.
I have one further question, Robert. This is Paul Pratt again. In terms of the individual transactions that an angel fund engages in, what's a typical one look like? I mean, what's the size? What's the structure
of a program like this?
No, I'm talking about the individual venture investment in a company and an angel fund. Is it subordinated debt? Is it common stock? Is it preferred? Are there warrants? I mean, is it a complicated structure or is it relatively straightforward?
There are a lot of different structures. There are two most common structures. Three. Frequently what you just see is everybody purchases the common shares. Once other money from angels comes into a deal, then that money usually comes in as debt with warrants or equity kickers, where the angel defers the job of valuing the company and until a later date. Generally, the money goes in as a loan, and at the next round, presume the company gets to a next round, the value of the company is determined, and the debt is converted into equity. The third method is usually participating preferred. This is the standard template used by VCs at the early rounds, and many angel investors tend to use that model. They tend to mimic what the professional venture investors are doing, particularly when they're making more substantial investments. These structures, we're going to be sharing these in some detail at a course in Boston in early May, and we'll be glad to, if people are interested in sort of the guts of all this stuff, we'd be delighted to share that with them.
Robert, this is Cliff Kellogg. Could you say a word about the reporting that you provide to the state and what you expect from the firms or funds that are in your portfolio?
Yes. So we have a very standard expectation that the funds in which we invest provide quarterly financial reports and annual audits. The annual audits need to be according to GAAP and need to provide end-of-year valuations of the portfolio. We expect our fund managers to get information on each of their invested companies. And now, at the financial level, all of that is reflected in the quarterly statements and the audits. But we look for information about jobs, about activities of our fund managers, and in some cases their portfolio companies that help us measure the economic impact of our portfolio. So, for instance, over time, we track the initial jobs that are expected when a fund invests in a new Oklahoma company. So we get that at closing. We also then track on an annual basis the revenue generated by those companies and the payroll paid by those companies in order to give us a sense of whether the company is continuing to create new jobs. We're able to take that information about payroll and plug it into our economic analysis. We actually have a firm out of Phoenix that runs all those numbers for us, and then they're able to calculate based upon the jobs created and the job growth and the sector in which the investment is made, the impact from those investments on the local economy. So that those are our goals.
Robert, this is Gary Hamer. I have a question to clarify the 2.5% management fee a little bit. In your scenario, you talked about the Treasury money coming to the state and then on down to the angel or seed funds. And then also another activity of kind of setting up angels and doing some of the organization. Does that 2.5% stay the same if somebody else does the second part of that?
Run past me again the second part.
Second part's where you're setting up the angel groups. Somebody else is already doing that in a state.
Yeah.
Is that 2.5% fee still true of the $13 million, so to speak, that you draw down from Treasury?
Well, let's say of that $13 million, that figure tends to be the kind of figure, if you were to hire somebody to manage those angel funds, that's the figure that is a fairly standard number that people would expect. So if you were to go out and hire somebody in Nebraska, and you're in Nebraska, right?
Correct.
Yeah. To do that kind of work, that's sort of the starting budget.
So basically, if you hire somebody to manage the fund of funds, 2.5% is what is a number you should think about.
No, I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question. The cost of managing a fund of funds tends to be considerably lower. To invest in funds, usually the standard fee is about 1%.
Okay.
The fee to manage a retail fund tends to be about 2.5%.
Okay.
The carried interest on a fund of funds is about 5%. The carried interest on for a retail fund tends to be about 20%.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Sorry.
Robert Paul Pride again. If you were advising a state on the two or three things they really need to consider most strongly before they make a decision to start an angel venture or other type of similar fund, what would those things be?
That's doing it with this resource, Paul?
Yes.
Okay. Number one, I would think through the cash flow. The SSBCI program has these expectations that capital will be deployed and then capital will be leveraged over certain periods of time. And so the seed and venture capital route can produce incredible leverage, but it tends to take longer. So we're actually implementing in Oklahoma our program first with credit collateral guarantees, where we're preserving, deploying our SSBCI funds as credit guarantees in order to begin to create impact and accomplish our objectives. But then over time, as we recycle that money, we're going to be putting it to work in angel funds. And so I think a structure that imagines how the cash will flow and how to use the cash initially to accomplish the objectives of the program while having supporting the patience you need to roll out a really healthy seed capital network. That would be number one. Probably number two is imagining how this would support the other development objectives in the state and the other institutions, the capital companies that already exist in the state. Programs like this tend to work better where they are encouraging things that are already going on or supporting things that are not yet going on, as opposed to competing with things that may already be going on. What would be the last thing? I guess our approach is to imagine how this can be done consistently over a very long period of time. Programs like this, as opposed to collateral guarantees, which we also do, you know, they take a lot of attention over a long period of time in order to achieve their maximum benefit. So imagining how to support the activity over not just a year, but over 10 years is an important part of the process. At least that's how we would approach it.
Robert, this is Cliff again at SSBCI. What is the role of the state once they have made their investment in the fund-of-fund structure?
The fund-of-fund structure, such as in Arkansas, the state appoints the board that approves the individual fund investments. So they hold policy direction over the program pretty much from beginning to end. They hire a manager, which is our firm, to go out and find funds based upon the investment criteria that they have established for us, to do the research, present those that we think are eligible and attractive for investment. We present it to the board. The board approves the deal or declines the deal, and then we, once they make that decision, we carry out that activity. So the state in Arkansas, the state in Oklahoma, for instance, are ultimately responsible for approving all of the portfolio fund investments over the life of the program. And they're responsible for hiring and firing the manager.
And that that approval group, the board, you said, they approve the investments that you present for all of these categories of types of funds.
That in fact, in Oklahoma and in Arkansas, that is the case. In both of those states, the governor appoints the board members. In Oklahoma, they're confirmed by the Senate, and they serve as the board, and they approve those investments. Now, they don't propose their own investments. They actually cannot, in both states, propose investments that do not come through the fund manager. So it's our job to go out and find the fund investment candidates and prepare them, present them to the board, always within the context of the investment strategy that the board has adopted. How does this fund fit the strategy that that has been adopted?
And as far as you know, the states that operate these programs or where Cimarron operates, is the venture capital program specifically described in a state legislation, or is it a program that's designed by the agency that has a much broader delegation that doesn't name the particular programs?
Both, actually, but most states have some statute that describes them. We tend to find that it's good to have them described, but not in so much detail that you can't use your good judgment to implement the program in the way you think makes most sense. Some of the most difficult programs are so narrowly defined that you can't really adjust as the world changes on you.
Robert, are there exemplary documents at the state level, the legislation, and maybe the program description that we could refer people to?
You bet. We'd be glad to. Exemplary is a tough word there, but there are a lot of good models that states have implemented. All of them include things that are pretty unique to those states. But, yes, there are some good templates out there.
We have tried to make a point to those documents, those program documents, when they are available. I think that's valuable for everybody that's trying to learn and adapt a program in their state.
Yeah.
That would be terrific.
We can make those available.
Are there other questions from any of the states that are still on the call? I've enjoyed this very much, and I want to give an opportunity for anyone else to ask a question who may have one. Okay. There was a possibility that participating on the call would be the the Council of Development Finance Agencies. Are they on the phone call or not? Doesn't sound so. All right. With this group, we had talked about holding further conference calls. We are unable to schedule one for next week. Just because of facility limitations here at the Treasury Department, and therefore we have penciled in a call for 2 weeks from Tuesday, and we will certainly send out announcements about that date, reminders of the date and time and the call. That would be on Tuesday, March 29th. At the same time, 1 p.m. Eastern, it will be the next scheduled phone call of this group, and we will send out, email out, a reminder, and any materials beforehand. If there are no other questions, I think we are adjourned. Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.